Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good, and it comes from polls all over the place. Governor's races, Senate races, right track, wrong track, all sorts of different things. And it was just 2 days ago when Andrew was filling in for you that we kind of were worried about the North Carolina Senate race because the polls have been headed in Kay Hagan's direction rather than Tom Tillis in that race. However, while that still unfortunately is the case, we're seeing a number of different polls showing things much better for Republicans in some other races. Just out today, a Quinnipiac poll shows Cory Gardner up 8 on Mark Udall out in Colorado. In Iowa, there is a 6-point edge for Joni Ernst against Bruce Braley. That also, according to Quinnipiac. Fox News also has some pretty good news out there in some of these races for senators. There's a Marquette University poll out there showing Scott Walker now up by 3 points among likely voters. Quinnipiac also has Bob Beaupre up 10 points on Hickenlooper, so you might want to wonder about some of those samples. But nonetheless, overall, looking at these surveys, right track, wrong track, both Rasmussen and CBS has right track under 30, so that obviously bodes well for the party out of power in the U.S. Senate. So, Jim, overall, reason for optimism?
I'll focus on the Gardner poll, since that's the one that really is kind of an earthquake this morning. There had been increasing amount of Republican concern about Colorado because Cory Gardner is a pretty darn good candidate. People seem to think that he was running a good campaign. Mark Udall is not exactly a whirling dervish of raw political charisma. And Colorado is a state that Obama had won twice, but Republicans were used to thinking of as a purple state. And the kind of the sentiment for most of the last couple of weeks, polling had been pretty consistent of putting Udall in around the mid-40s and Gardner in 40, 41, somewhere around there. Now, it's not a crisis, but I heard from a whole bunch of readers and folks saying, Jim, what's going on out in Colorado? It's not looking good out there. You talk to people and the attitude is, turn up the concern a notch. Maybe people will say we turn it down after these last couple of polls. But a sense that, look, it's hard to knock off an incumbent, which means a Republican is going to have a hard ceiling of about 51%, 52% in a state like Colorado. He's been absolutely hammered on the airwaves because Democrats decided to spend their money early. And the attitude was, all right, we're still standing. We're still within 3 or 4. As long as we are even on the television advertising for the final 6 weeks or so, and as long as we can get people who are frustrated with Obama and the direction of the country out to vote for Gardner, the people in the Gardner campaign and Colorado Republican Party, folks like that, were saying, okay, we still feel pretty good. Nobody's saying we got this, it's locked up. Now, this poll result today should have the Udall folks freaking out because it comes on top of yesterday's poll by USA Today that had Gardner up 1. Now, you can say, if the polls are all around, who knows what to think? No reason for Udall to worry. But here, let me just read to you the numbers for Udall. Most of them had him somewhere in the 40s, and the last two have him 42 and 40. He has been pretty consistently in that mid-40 range pretty much for about the past year or so. And if you're an incumbent who's in that mid-40 range, it looks like he's hit a hard ceiling. And what's really got to be freaking him out is that Gardner, at least in these last two, has taken the lead. And that Udall has done it at a time when he's got an enormous advertising advantage. So this may be kind of the high watermark, or perhaps the high watermark for Udall has passed. Now, nobody in Colorado should be high-fiving each other yet, but things are not as bad as they may have seemed a short while ago. And as you said, good news in Florida, good news in Wisconsin governor's race. Numbers are starting to pile up. It's not terrific, but, nice little shot in the arm. And if either Quinnipiac is an outlier, or it's catching something that we're going to see in the next couple of polls, which means that, at that point, it's, to use the Dan Rather term, it's kitty bar the door time for Democrats across the country if Udall is in this much trouble.
We'll obviously get a ton more polling. We've still got a number of weeks to go, and momentum tends to shift on a dime for a number of reasons in different races. So we'll stay on top of it, of course. On to the bad martini now. And, Jim, it was just about a week ago that we heard from the family of James Foley, who was the first journalist to be beheaded by ISIS and shocking the conscience of the civilized world. And they talked about their frustrations before the beheading of trying to work with the Obama administration and trying to find a resolution that would get their son freed. They were trying to figure out a way to pay a ransom, and obviously the official government position is that we don't do that. We don't pay off terrorists to release hostages. But they said they were actually threatened with prosecution if they had gone forward with that. Now the family of Stephen Sutloff is saying the same thing. Their spokesman, Barak Barfi, was on CBS this morning, and Nora O'Donnell asked this question and got this answer.
Did you feel like the U.S. government gave the Sutloff family the help that they wanted?
Not at all. We never really believed that the administration was doing anything to help us.
And Barfi says it's because they never had access to high-ranking officials. They always got kicked down the ladder to somebody who really couldn't do that much. Then Gail King chimed in.
Now, there are reports that the Foleys were considering raising money. Did the Sutloffs try to do that, to pay a ransom?
Gail, what happened is we had meetings with the administration. The family sat with this National Security Council, and basically he bullied and hectored them, and they were scared.
And then they were talking about perhaps paying a ransom.
I tried to come up with creative solutions how we could get around the law. Mm-hmm. I said, well, how do you know that the group holding Steve is a terrorist organization? We know, they said. Well, how would you know if we tried to transfer money? The banks wouldn't allow it. They shot us down at every opportunity.
Now, Jim, it's obviously understandable that a family who lost a loved one, especially in a horrific manner, was trying to do whatever they could to save a loved one's life. And the government obviously said that's not our policy. There could be some resentment. But just the description of how they were treated in this back and forth is pretty alarming.
Yeah, here's the one of the big problems. That on the one hand, the administration and the government is in a really tough position. On the other hand, when a family's going through something like this, you've got to treat them with the utmost respect. Meaning that if you're going to say to them, no, we're not going to allow you to make this kind of this payment, that you're not going to let you pay ransom, you got to do it in the terms of, look, if we pay the ransom, this creates a big incentive for other groups to do this, and then other families will go through what you're going through right now. That's the thinking on this, and I think there's a great logic to this, and I'd like to think that a family could see the value of that. The flip side is maybe if your loved one is in a circumstance like that, you'll do anything to bring your loved one home, and it doesn't matter about other consequences and other things that happen because of paying the ransom. On the other hand, it certainly sounds like this was a brusque and it's sometimes just flat out insensitive and disrespectful treatment of these families. And it's just not, you know, the way we want our government to treat our people, particularly when they're in a really, you know, bad spot like this. So it's a frustrating set of circumstances. But unsurprisingly, the administration that's supposed to be so much wiser and more sensitive and better judgment and all that stuff, is turning out to be kind of jerky in their treatment of people in really bad spots.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. Jim, and I'm sure you remember very well that a third place finish in the 2012 New Hampshire primary was declared by John Huntsman to be a ticket to ride, ladies and gentlemen, on the way to dropping out before the next primary, apparently. And now the rumors are abounding, thanks to the reporting of Ala Pundit over at Hot Air, that John Huntsman is toying with not only a 2016 White House bid, but an independent one, according to three sources close to Huntsman. Other friends and former aides suggested the 2016 conversations were primarily a function of Huntsman's willingness to hear out his reporters. But even before he quit the race in 2012, Hot Air reports Huntsman considered going independent twice, once in the summer and again in the fall of 2011. So, Jim, this guy's gone from being just kind of the boring guy at the end of the stage to a potential fly in the ointment who obviously thinks he's more popular than he is in this country. But if he does get in the race, he's only going to help Hillary or whoever the Democratic nominee is.
Well, actually, I might disagree with you.
Really?
Greg, I actually think that John Huntsman has so thoroughly obliterated any remote chance of a conservative thinking of him as a good choice. And he's become such a classic MSNBC Republican. And that's not merely because his daughter is now one of their, I'd say even one of their token righties, but she so rarely expresses anything conservative on the cycle. I'm not even sure, you know, she's merely the slightly less liberal than the rest of them voice on that panel. If he jumps in, I think the world will yawn. I don't think he would be this big factor. I think he walks around with this stunningly exaggerated sense of his own importance in all this. And I say this is a guy who liked him not too long ago and met him very early on in the 2012 cycle. He says he's thinking about running. He's kindly invites me and a couple other reporters to his home in D.C. He's a very nice guy. And I put to him, look, you know, you worked for Obama. as his ambassador to China. A lot of, you know, Republican primary voters are going to have a problem with that. So how do you address that? And he gave me basically the answer he gave for the rest of the campaign, which is, no, people won't be upset about that. They understand that if your president asks you to serve, you serve. Sorry, John Huntsman, no, Republicans didn't trust you because you worked for Obama. Republicans in 2012 and today are really, really, really anti-Obama, and they see working with him as working with liberalism incarnate. And so they're just not going to believe that you're a good conservative or somebody who's going to move the country to the right if you work for a really liberal president, even if it's in a relatively less partisan area like China policy. He was in flat-out denial, I think, for the entire campaign, and he was, you know, put all of his resources into New Hampshire, and he finished, as you said, was it third place?
Third place.
Yeah, and you know, by that point, it was pretty clear that he was going nowhere. I have no reason to think he would, you know, I don't think he would make a big splash in a Democratic primary. I don't think he's going to make a big splash as an independent candidate. Remember when Harry Reid said Mitt Romney hadn't paid taxes for 10 years?
Yes.
And he said, oh, it's not just me. I heard it from somebody. It turns out he heard it from somebody in John Huntsman's family.
Mm.
And as soon as I heard that, I was like, all right, you're dead to me. Okay. You know, like, that's not quite a threat, but just a sense of, look, whatever you felt about the 2012 primary, once it was Romney against Obama, all right, everybody on board, right? We all got to pull this row in the same direction. None of this personal peak vendetta dispute crap, okay? We got a country to save. And obviously the Huntsman family wasn't in that. And also, by the way, what are you doing talking to Harry Reid? Remember my way to go, Nevada? Way to go, Huntsman family, okay? And so I just, you know, that really kind of repulsed me. And I just think it's a terrible thing to do. And then the next thing is that once Harry Reid is saying, oh, I heard this from a Republican who, you know, I think you have an obligation to come out and say, yeah, it was me. And here's how I know. And by the way, obviously, this is the Huntsman just making up crap and giving Harry Reid fodder to whack around the Republican nominee. I mean, this is stupid. This is selfish. This is petty. And it just, I can't, you know, can you tell I have strong views on this, Greg?
I can. You know, D.C. has one of the worst gridlock traffic patterns anywhere. But I was laughing out loud a few months ago when I saw a car that had the Virginia license plate with the Gadsden flag, the Don't Tread on Me flag, and then a Huntsman 2012 bumper sticker. I'm like,
okay, so you found his fan.
Yes.
You found the one.
I'm like,
all right, so they exist.
Talk about conflicting.
So that might be the vote he would get in the presidential campaign. I am really very doubtful that a John Huntsman independent bid would do much of anything, but you know, in a way, if it does really stir anything, I kind of have a feeling it might get some anti-Hillary Democrats. I mean, we're talking about the kind of, you know, it's a very small demographic. It's the kind of demographic that finds David Gergen exciting.
Perfect conclusion. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.